Warning, the following ZipRecruiter radio spot you are about to hear is going to be filled with F-words.
When you're hiring, we at ZipRecruiter know you can feel frustrated, forlorn even, like your efforts are futile, and you can spend a fortune trying to find fabulous people, only to get flooded with candidates who are just fine. Fortunately, ZipRecruiter figured out how to fix all that. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ziprecruiter.com/zip. With ZipRecruiter, you can forget your frustrations because we find the right people for your roles fast, which is our absolute favorite F word. In fact, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day.
Fantastic.
So, whether you need to hire 4, 40, or 400 people, get ready to meet first-rate talent. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/zip to try ZipRecruiter for free. Don't forget, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. Finally, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Welcome to the Boneyard with Steve Robertson. As always, I am your good friend and host, Steve Robertson. Man, it feels so good to win. It does. You know, I probably hate losing more than I love winning. But when we win, it is so incredibly beautiful. And it's not just because the majesty of the moment, and we're going to get to some of that. It was such a historic, in many respects, huge day for Hunter Hines. I mean, that may be like the signature shot. You know what I'm saying? But it's what it means to our team, our season, and our program for us to take this series over Vanderbilt. And listen, that's a really good Vanderbilt team. Are they elite? No, I don't believe so. But they have a very, very good lineup. There's no easy outs in that order, but they don't have the star, right? They don't have that one guy. They don't have a Caglione. They don't have a Braden Montgomery. They don't have a Hunter Hines or Dakota Jordan. They don't have that guy. But you're like, you know what? You can't let that kid beat you. They don't have that guy. But that said, there's a lot of consistency in this order, a lot of length in this order. And I tell you the thing, I told Ani this last night when I was on my way home from Nashville. Every pitch in this series mattered. And so it was such an emotional roller coaster, you know, for all of us, right? I mean, we weren't even playing in the game. Of course, I'm there covering, many of you watching at home. But you always felt like you're one pitch away from being in trouble or one pitch away from being in good shape. Every pitch mattered. It was incredible. And we came out on the winning end of that. We needed to go. We had to get one. We needed to get two. We dreamed of getting 3. But we got what we needed. We got 2. And now it sets up really well for Mississippi State. All year long, you've heard me talking about, you know what, I think in order for us to have a chance to get to the tournament, you got to get to 14. Well, now you got 12 with 3 weekends to play and 9 games left. And so does it sound unreasonable to say, okay, we can go 5-4 in these last 9? Well, 5-4 gets you to 17 wins. I think that's doable. That's the thing you think about Alabama coming in this weekend. Alabama, of course, wins a series over Ole Miss. But Lamonis said it himself. You know, our goal is to host. Our goal is to be a 1 seed, not just make the tournament. And so we got to stay hungry, got to stay healthy, got to keep rolling, got to win that series this weekend. But I think we've reached a point now that I would say the majority of our fans kind of accepted the fact, hey, we're going to make the tournament. We talked about maybe being a strong 2 somewhere, got a chance to be a really strong 2 somewhere, and potentially 1 seed if things go the way that we hope. But a lot of baseball left to be played. We're going to recap the weekend. Before we get into that, though, I want to offer our most sincere condolences to Coach Bob Tower and his family. Coach passed away over the weekend. I know some of you were students at Mississippi State or players at Mississippi State when Coach Tyler was there. Pretty sad moment for sure. But got the word yesterday morning that he had passed away. He had been ill for a little while and had not been getting around really good here as of late. When I interviewed him for one of my books, I think it was Alpha Dogs, I think, he could barely hear. And so, like, I'd call him on his cell phone, and he said, hey, call the landline, I can hear you better there. And he would repeat every question to make sure that he knew what I wanted. And he would say, okay, now, Stephen, and nobody calls me that anymore. this is what I heard you say. You said, what did it feel like when I got the head coaching job at Mississippi State? Right, something along those lines. And I'd say, yes, sir. He'd say, okay, here we go. He was so great and so charming and such a gentleman. And we've been expecting this day for a little while. And, of course, had a couple people hit us up and let us know, man. It stinks. It really does. But I feel so honored to have had the opportunity to help document his story and kind of share what Mississippi State meant to him. And so our thoughts and prayers go out to the family. If you are considering, you know, maybe making a trip or you're going to pay your respects to Coach and his family, let me give you the details on that. I want to make sure you know, because there are a lot of people I know that maybe don't do social media, especially someone from our older generation. And I say that with love and respect. I just want to make sure that you know what's going on. And I'm looking it up now. A lot of stuff I got to go through here. But Coach, I guess I could have made this easier on myself. But so Coach's arrangements, visitation will be Tuesday, April 30th from 4 to 7 p.m. at the First Baptist Church at Water Valley. And so if you'd like to go and just kind of pay your respects, you can do that. If you're interested in the funeral, that'll be 10 to 11 visitation, 10 to 11, with a funeral following from 11 to 12 at First Baptist Church, Water Valley, Mississippi, on Wednesday. And so those are the arrangements. And, you know, a guy that did a lot for Mississippi State, you know, a guy that did a lot for Mississippi State football and had a real vision and was in many respects kind of misunderstood by a lot of people. But, you know, was a part of some pretty special things here and really kind of committed us to get real serious about football. For a while there, we kind of drifted between the Alan McKean years and Bob Tyler. We had some men come in and work harder, but I don't know that we had the commitment from a university standpoint that maybe we should have. But things kind of changed when Tyler got here. The recruiting lounge in the Davis-Wade Stadium is the Bob Tyler recruiting lounge. It's named after Coach. So he has, you know, the naming recognition there. But I know a lot of people love Coach. And again, it's a very sad time when anybody dies, but especially somebody that we felt like in many respects part of our family, our extended family. It's one thing, you know, you got your biological family, your in-laws, that sort of stuff. But, you know, this whole Mississippi State thing is a volunteer organization, right? You choose allegiance here. And when somebody picks us and comes in here and does some good things for us, we're very grateful. So, Coach, we'll miss you. And for all those that that love him and will miss him, our thoughts and prayers go out to you. All right, let's thank our friends at Bulldog Burger Company, longtime sponsors of this show. Man, I love Bulldog Burger Company. I'm doing my best to get in there about once a week these days. I think that's a sweet spot for me because like, I satisfy the craving, and then by the time I go again, I'm craving something else, right? You know what I'm saying? So it's a healthy routine and schedule for me. So I'll get in there probably, honestly, I got to get on a Pearl on Wednesday. Maybe we'll get in there maybe Thursday. That sounds good. Thursday, if not before then. You need to get in there too. It's true. Three great locations to serve you. University Drive here in Star Vegas, Gloucester Street there in Tupelo, Lake Harbor Drive in the Ridge and Flowood area. I absolutely love Bulldog Burger Company. I did before they were a sponsor of the show. I jumped at the opportunity to work with them because I wanted, number one, support local business. But number two, it was such a cool place, and I loved it so much, I thought this is a good thing. Go in there, have a spring rolls as your appetizer. They'll make you and everybody around you better looking. and get that chocolate shake to go. But in the middle of all that, you got to get that great restaurant quality hamburger. You may get it with onion rings or fries or tater tots or whatever you choose. Maybe get a side salad. I don't know. You do your own thing. But those great restaurant quality burgers, that's the best way to go. If you're new, get the Bulldog. Get the Bulldog. But if you've been around a little bit, maybe you got a little hair on your chest, you get that Smokehouse, get the Bryant, the Lauren, get the Freshman 15. You need to try them all. Find out what your favorites are. We love it when you come visit. We love it when you stop in to dine at Bulldog Burger Company, the place where people go to meet. M-E-A-T. All right. Where do we begin? We could begin at the ending, which is kind of a little bit of a teaser for our top 10 list today. Just so you guys know. Have you thinking about that? If you're a modern rock fan, you'll know. If you love classic rock, you'll love it too. Even though this isn't a classic rock band. But Bulldogs now 29-15 on the year, 12-9 in Southeastern Conference play. So three games over 500. I'll tell you another thing that's interesting. We talk about how good we can be at home at times, right? 20-7, and we probably shouldn't have dropped half those games. Just kind of call it for what it is. But away from home, do you know these numbers? I don't think you do. We're 9-8. 9-8 away from Duty Noble Field. 2-1 on our neutral field because we played 2 in Biloxi, 1 in Pearl. And then 7-7 in true road games. Were you expecting that? That's the mark of a gritty team, right? And of course, it should be better. But we can't talk about what should be. We got to talk about what is, you know. And it's interesting how the narrative changes. It really is. I got some things to say about that, too, before I get out of this show. You say, but Steve, you shouldn't say it on my show. I will say what I want. Plenty of other people have a lot to say, too. They're just not nearly as well informed. All right, so let's start with our first game on Friday. And listen, I'll tell you this. Bryce Cunningham for Vanderbilt was great. He was. Now, I won't just sit there and say he had dominant biting stuff. He did a really good job kind of getting soft contact. And Cal Steven was great, too. But Cunningham a little bit better. You know, we had a case of the Adam balls. We barreled some things up. But only two hits in the ballgame. Let's run through it real quick here. Kind of a slow start for Cal, too. You know, we go 1-2-3 there in the first, and then the very first pitch of the game for Cal Steven is now a souvenir, as it was blasted into the right field seats to go 1-0. I'm thinking here, we might be in trouble. That's how it felt. I was like, Then you get Austin to foul out, Diaz pops up to short. It's a really soft contact there, and you think, okay, we get out of this with just kind of a solo home run. We're okay. And then Espinal hit a homer two to center field, and that guy is really good. To this point, and I've seen a lot, I think this catcher for Vanderbilt's the best catcher I've seen this year. I truly believe that. I mean, there's some balls that he blocked up. He had no business blocking up. Made a couple laser throws to second base. Guy's really, really good. So, of course, he introduces himself with a solo home run to make it 2-0. We get Davis out of it. And you think, okay, 2-0. We just need to settle in here. Top of second, we go 1-2-3 again. Bottom of second, they push across another run. And it just kind of felt like this game was getting away from us. It's one of those things that feels like, man, it's getting late early. Because you know how Friday nights are. I mean, runs are at a premium on Friday nights. But, hey, give them some credit. They push across here and do what good teams do. Lanive grounds out to second. Polkin singles to right field. And then still second and goes third on a wild pitch. So it's somewhat self-inflicted there, right? We give up the single. They advance the runner. And then we give them third. And you get a routine ground ball to second, which allows the run to score. Had we not had the wild pitch there, the run doesn't score. So we contributed to our own demise there. State goes 1-2-3 in the third. And this is what you start thinking. Three runs felt like about 10. It really did, because we just simply couldn't put balls in play. We just couldn't seem to find any green grass out there. All right, bottom of three, Cal, good inning here for him. He gets fly out, and a line out. Very efficient inning, too. Just seven pitches in the inning. All right, top of four. We get a little bit of a two-out rally here. DJ has the infield single. And then they walk Hines. And so you're thinking here, if you're like me, I'm thinking, okay, if Hizak can just get a single, we can get one run, it's a different game. You know, you got to break through. Of course, our first hit is an infield single, right? But you're thinking, hey, if Hizak can put a ball here in the gap, we can score one, maybe two. If nothing else, just give me a routine single somewhere. And it's a 3-1 ball game. However, we couldn't get it done. Hizak hits the ground ball to short. They force a runner at second. And it really felt like a missed opportunity, especially considering the gravity of the game, right? And the way that they were pitching, you kind of just felt like we weren't going to get a ton of opportunities. Back-to-back good innings for Cal. He gets a 1-2-3 inning here in the fourth. And then State goes 1-2-3 in the fifth. But it's Kohler flying out to center. Larry strikes out looking. And I thought was a little bit of a – I think he got caught in the guessing game there. And then Pulliam lines out to center field. Actually hit that ball pretty well. The kid showing you he can do more than ground balls to left. Vanderbilt then goes 1-2-3. And that's a streak, guys. Cal retired 15 in a row. 15 in a row. State goes 1-2-3 in the sixth. But again, we put the ball in play, and it's a line out for Chance, a line out for Marshawn. Adam balls galore. Bottom of six, Cal streak continues 1-2-3, gets Vastine, Austin, and Diaz. It's 1-2-3 in the Vandy order. All right, top of the seventh. Jordan grounds to third. Hines goes down swinging, and then Hizak doubles to left field. And now you're thinking, okay, here we go, here we go, here we go, here we go. And then Kohler reaches on the fielding error, and you got runners at first and third. Again, two-out situation, but you got to get a ball in play here. And we missed the opportunity. Larry grounds out to second base. And that ball was hit right out there to Jaden Davis, too, just like the one on Kohler. Kohler hits it out there to second, and he just can't field it. The same thing happened on Imani's ground ball. He just recovered in time to throw him out. But, again, a chance there, and we let him off the hook. Bottom of seven. They finally get to Cal again. He gets Espinal to strike out swinging, and then Davis singles to right field. There's a ground out, works like a bunt, moves the runner over, and then Davis goes to third on a wild pitch. They walk Polk, and then get Barksy to fly out center field. So a little bit of a threat there from Vanderbilt. They're probably thinking, hey, we missed a chance here to expand this lead, Steve. It's not just the Bulldogs not getting the time we hit. We didn't get it either. Top of eight, State goes 1-2-3. It's ground out, ground out, ground out. And it's Pulliam, Long, and Chance. Bryce had a tough luck weekend. Tough guy to strike out, but went 0 for the weekend. All right, Vanderbilt, bottom eight. Holcomb doubles down the left field line. And then Vastine flies out. Runner has to hold. We bring in Schulke, and they had the pinch runner on. He steals third, and then they kind of manufacture a run here. Austin flies out to left. RBI sack fly makes it a 4-0 game. And Diaz, for some reason, decides to bunt, and Logan Kohler is like, I can't believe you made it that easy on me. 4-0 ahead of top of nine. Marshawn rolls out the first. They toss to the pitcher, and he covers. Then Jordan grounds out to the shortstop. They walk Hunter Hines, and then Hizak pops up to third. So, you know, just not a great night offensively, and some nights it happens like that. I mean, people are always like, man, this offense. Sometimes you got to tip your cap to the pitcher. I thought Bryce Cunningham did a great job there. You go back and look at his numbers. It wasn't like he was striking us out. It'd be one thing if we were just not seeing the ball well. He just kind of did a good job getting on the barrels. But he goes to full nine, allows two hits, walk two, four strikeouts. And you look at 122 pitches. I mean, he's good. But 11 flyouts and 12 groundouts. Again, it's not like he was just dominating us. He was just competing in the zone. And we just had some tough luck. We really did. Cal Steven goes 7 1/3, is tagged with a loss. Almost seems unfortunate. I mean, but you consider the fact that he gave you 7 1/3 innings after giving up two tanks in the first. Shows a lot about Cal Steven. Allowed 5 hits, 4 runs, 6 strikeouts, and just the 1 walk there. And a couple wild pitches. But, a good effort. I mean, I can't hate on the effort, but you got to get him some run support. Cam Schulke gets the final 2 outs, and that's your ball game. So we lose 4-0, and what's interesting, if you recall, when we first talked about this series, I said I felt like State would win on Friday, lose on Saturday, then win on Sunday. And lo and behold, the first thing we hoped to happen didn't happen.
Finding great candidates to hire can be like, well, trying to find a needle in a haystack. Sure, you can post your job to some job board, but then all you can do is hope the right person comes along, which is why you should try ZipRecruiter for free. At ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its powerful technology identifies people with the right experience and actively invites them to apply to your job. You get qualified candidates fast. So while other companies might deliver a lot of hay, ZipRecruiter finds you what you're looking for. The needle in the haystack.
See why 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free, at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. That's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hey, it's Austin James. Yes, I'm living with diabetes, but it doesn't have to define me. Thanks to the FreeStyle Libre 3 Plus sensor, I get real-time glucose readings throughout the day. The FreeStyle Libre 3 Plus sensor is small and easy to wear, giving me the freedom to focus on my life as a parent and a musician. Now this is progress. You can get a free sensor at freestylelibre.us.
Offer available for people who qualify. Visit myfreestyle.us to see all terms and conditions. Certain exclusions apply. Data on file, Abbott Diabetes Care, for prescription only. Safety info found at freestylelibre.us.
All right, we get into the second game here, and they had Carter Holt going. And Carter Holton, pardon me, he had been absolutely filthy this year. Entered a game with a 6-1 record. Leaves with a 6-2 record. Really, really good game by your Bulldogs. And it really felt like once we kind of got ahead, we were determined to stay ahead and did a lot of big things to kind of put this game away offensively. And again, so as bad as the offense looked on Friday, we did some things on Saturday, kind of the mark of a good team. All right, we go 1-2-3 there in the first, and Jordan strikes out swinging. Tough weekend for DJ. It was. But he'll bounce back. I think he'll get a much better weekend this weekend. But all right, bottom of one, we give up a one-out double to Austin, who played a really good first base. I thought he saved some errors for them on Friday. But Vastan flies out. Austin doubles to left center. And then it's back-to-back pop-ups from Diaz and Espinal. So really good effort here from Brooks Auger. Top of the second, Hunter Hines hits an absolute monster of a home run to right field on a 1-2 count. And he crushed that thing. Absolutely crushed it. All right, so 1-0. Hizak then goes down swinging. Larry singles to right field. Good to see him. Monty kind of get going, and we moved him down in the order a little bit. We may need to move him back, but we'll see. Amani is then out at second, caught stealing. Kind of crazy, but it was one of those things where he read the ball in the dirt, and it didn't get far enough away. He didn't get a good enough jump. And then, again, when you got Espinal back there, who's, you know, could be a big leaguer someday, you can't afford to give him outs. We gave one away here. Because remember, I'm only guaranteed 21 outs because the game's got to go 7 innings, right? You say, but Steve, it's 27. No. We could be run ruled. All right, so then Kohler flies out to center field. And so kind of quiet in the early going. You get the one guy on, and then you kind of erase him yourself other than the home run there. You know what I'm saying? A chance for a bigger inning is kind of the point I'm making. You get the home run, and then you get the one-out single. It'd been nice to swing a little bit more, that inning. All right, bottom of second. 1-2-3 inning for Auger. Davis goes down swinging. Lanib grounds out the first, and then Polk down swinging. A lot of punch-outs. And I thought Auger did a great job kind of mixing the change and the breaking ball in there instead of just being the power guy. He's in there mixing and matching a little bit and keeping guys off balance. Got to pace yourself a little bit more when you're a starter, obviously. All right, top of third, stay goes 1-2-3. Pulliam pops up to first. Powell flies out to center, and Chance strikes out swinging. 1-0 ball game. We all knew that wasn't going to be enough to win. Bottom of third, and Auger just still dealing here. Ground out to second, ground out to short, and then gets Vastine to strike out swinging. And that's a righty-lefty matchup, and that's a really good hitter. That's a good outing for Brooks Auger. Top of four. Mershon grounds out to the pitcher. Jordan walks, and then Hines doubles to left center to drive in Jordan. And he takes this ball the other way. And he hammered this ball
the other way. So now it's a 2-0 ball game, and it's a Hunter Hines show. Hizak flies out to left. Amani strikes out looking on a full count. Sometimes he just gets caught guessing, but I got to get a competitive swing and at least try to break that thing up. All right, bottom of four. Austin lines out to right. Diaz singles to third base here. There was just no play. You know, it's just kind of a – number one, Diaz is really fast. But it's just kind of a, you know, it's kind of an in-between play there. And I thought Kohler made the right decision not to even attempt to throw. He is going to beat it. And against a wild pitch, Diaz goes to second. Espinal strikes out swinging. Davis walks, and Lanive flies out to left. So we get to the fourth, and it feels like, hey, maybe Brooks is fading a little bit. We're starting to get a little traffic on the base. So you got to be careful. All right, top of five. Kohler goes down swinging. Pulliam singles to left. Powell lines out to center. Chance flies out to right field. So at the very least, you at least, you know, you turn around the order here so you can lead off in the sixth. In the fifth, though, Brooks Auger just kind of bears down here. He gets a 1-2-3 inning, including a couple punch-outs. Polk grounds out to short. Koziel strikes out swinging, and Holcomb strikes out swinging. That's a 9-hole hitter for Vanderbilt. So headed to the sixth here, everybody's got top of the order up. And Dave Marchand, who's actually a 2-hole hitter, I apologize. He singles through the left side, goes to second on a wild pitch. You got to make this work, right? Jordan is then walked on a full count, and good job by DJ to lay off that slider. And then Hines comes up, and he hits a towering fly ball to right. Now, wind was blowing out. He didn't get it all, but he got just enough to get it up in that wind, and the thing just kept carrying. And off the bat, I turned to my neighbor, and I said, there's your ball game. Three-run blast makes it 5-0 State. They bring in Sieber in place of Holton. And really, really good effort there. That's the thing, too. You think about the left-hander, right? Hunter Hines was hitting like a 180 against left-handers. And down in Georgia, he kind of figured some things out. Excuse me, Vanderbilt. What am I thinking? All right, then they bring in Sieber. He gets Hizak to strike out swinging. Larry strikes out swinging. Colerton grounds out the second. So damage done in the inning. Makes it a 5-0 game. You feel like, okay, we're gonna cruise here. No, we're not going to cruise. And a team like Vandy, as well coached as they are, they're not going to quit. Bottom of six, we walk Vastan. It's one of those things, too. It's like, man, he gives you 1-2-3 in the fifth, and you want to give him one in the sixth. And, man, you just hate that. But listen, Brooks had done his job. He was fading a little bit. So you bring in Schulke, and they had the little fielder's choice here. And we forced the runner at second. Can't get two. And then Diaz walks. And so this is the thing, too. It's like we talk about how baseball is such a game of inches. Man, if you could somehow make that play, it's a different dynamic. It really is. Diaz walks, and then Diaz goes to second. We have a throw in the air here by the pitcher on a failed pickoff attempt. And so now all of a sudden they got two guys in scoring position. You say, okay, it's gonna get us. And it does. But not the way you would think. Espinal hit a home run over the library. Now it's now a 5-3 game. But Schulke, you know how competitive and tough he is? He battles back and strikes out the last two hitters. So we get out of it with no further damage done. It's 5-3. The Vandy crowd have been sitting on their hands much of the day. Now all of a sudden they're back in the ballgame. Top of seven, State goes 1-2-3, and it felt like the momentum was kind of shifting away from us. We bring in Tyson Harden. And he gives up back-to-back hits. He gives up a double and then a single. And you're thinking, okay, well, here it goes, guys. Here it goes. And Holcomb reaches on a fielder's choice. We force the runner at third. And Marchand is so well coached and so polished. When you get that ground ball to the right side, it's so tough to turn a double play. You take the out. Get the lead runner. And what do you know, the next guy, Bastine, grounds into the double play. It's a 4-6-3. We're out of the deal. So back-to-back hits and then two really good defensive plays for your Bulldogs keep the game right where it is at 5-3. Top of eight, Marchand walks. You're thinking, man, we could use a big insurance run here. And he's out stealing. And then Jordan goes down swinging. Hines goes down swinging. And again, it felt like the momentum was clearly back and forth. They had it. We get it with an ending double play, and then they go through 3, 4, 5 here. And
retired the minimum. So bottom of eight here, and this is where we all got a little bit unnerved. Austin singles up the middle, and then still second, and we throw it in the center. Guys, it was not even a competitive throw. And now he's at third. Diaz puts the ball up there to second base. They roll it ahead. I'm sure it was. Run scores. Then Espinal's hit by the pitch, and you feel like, okay, this is where the melt happens. It's done. We're going to lose. Well, Harden gets Hewitt to pop up to the shortstop. Now it's 5-4, and so with the lefty, Lanive, coming up, we bring in Tyler Davis. He gets to fly out to center. And they got Polk up there, and I tell you what, this 3-2 pitcher was absolutely filthy. I saw some people say, well, you know, Steve, the bases were loaded, but they weren't. They weren't. But runners in motion here, and full count, and Tower absolutely outsmarts him here, gets him caught in the guessing game, trying to do a little bit too much. It's a swinging K, so they get the one run. So we head to nine, clinging to a one-run lead. Needed to get away to get that run back, a little insurance, give us a little cushion. That way one swing can't tie you. And what do you know, Connor Hizak comes up big and singles to left center. Larry grounds out to the third baseman, and on the play, the only play is the first. Hizak moves to second, so it works like a bunt. They bring in Grayson Carter here. And guys, he throws really hard, but it's really, really flat. It just is. So Kohler grounds out to second, pushes to run to third. And Pulliam comes up, and I turned to Steph, and I said, he's not going to pull this guy. I mean, Pulliam has been played as a Deadpool hitter. This guy's hitting 100 on the gun. Best chance is to take his ball the other way. And what do you know, very first pitch, Pulliam absolutely blisters this thing the other way. It evades the right fielder, gets to the wall. Hizak scores. Now it's 6-4. You're thinking, we're good here. And then, lo and behold, Pulliam comes around to third on a wild pitch. Of course, you know, the double there was huge because not only are you trading spaces, you're cashing in the run, right? And then Powell rips that ball into left field, and Pulliam scores 7-4. And I tell you, the air in that stadium completely changed. Again, baseball's a game of momentum. We went and created some for ourselves, and here it is, really, the bottom half of this order coming through, putting up two big runs for the Bulldogs. All right, bottom of nine, we get a ground out to second, a fly out to right. Vastine singles to the left side, and nobody even cares. Austin flies out to right field. There's your ball game. Bulldogs went 7-4 to even the series. And now all of a sudden it's like, hey, we expected to win on Friday and lose on Saturday, but lo and behold, we were wrong in both cases, but we're right where we thought we'd be, heading into a rubber game. Brooks Auger goes 5 innings, 2 hits. 1 run, 6 Ks, 2 walks. That line will work for your third starter. That is an outstanding effort from Brooks. Shilkey, not one of his better outings, but again, had some damage, but came right back. Tyson Harding, not one of his better outings. Gives up a couple of hits, but is able to kind of get out of it. And then Tyler Davis earns his second save of the year. Really good effort from him. And you have options on the weekend. You do. You're hitting heroes in this ball game. Hunter Hines, 3-for-4, 5 RBI. Ethan Pulliam, 2-for-4 with an RBI and a run scored. Like what the kid's doing. Really do. You guys do as well. That's the thing we talk about all the time. The teams that win, and I mean like win things of significance, down the stretch, you identify a third starter, and you find some production in the bottom third of your order. That's what State appears to be doing. It's a week-to-week deal, people. It is. All right, so we get to game number three. And we felt like the pitching matchup clearly favored Mississippi State with Gerangelo Sanchi going. You felt like, I don't know who they're going to throw, but I suspect that we're going to have the advantage. And lo and behold, we did. Now, Vandy elects to bring Devin Futrell. And we discussed him on our preview. We weren't sure how much he would throw. Thought we may see him for an inning or two. He does draw the start, and he is a former weekend starter. But we knew it wouldn't be a long outing. He's just going to kind of serve as an opener, and that was really the case. And I thought State did a good job against him, to be honest with you. I thought
if he had stayed in the game much longer, I believe this thing really gets away from them. And that's not really an indictment on his talent. It's just more about his health. I mean, he's just working himself back. First start in a month. And Chance, good at bat here, flies out to right field. I'm going to Bryce trying to take it more the other way here as of late. Mershon then works the count full, gets a walk. DJ strikes out looking. And he just got fooled on a pitch there. He knew it. Mershon still second, ends up at third after a wild pitch. And then Hines kind of a soft pop out there to third. So we don't get the run home here. And it's one of those things, too. Early we had traffic on the bases, and I kept kind of thinking, I was like, man, we got to get a big hit here and get this thing opened up and get in that bullpen. Bottom one, Vastine lines out the center. Austin strikes out swinging. Diaz strikes out looking. Top of second, again, traffic on the bases. Really good effort here by the Bulldog offense to barrel some balls up and create a scoring chance. Hyzak sharply singles back up the middle. And then Imani Larry, good to see Imani swinging a little bit better. Doubles to left center. Now you got runners at second, third. 2 men in scoring position. We just need a productive out to take a lead here. And instead, 7, 8, 9, Kohler, Pulliam, and Long all strike out swinging. And those, they were not really competitive at bats. Give Futrell some credit for kind of, you know, bearing down here. Because, you know, a base hit, there's 2 runs. A ground ball to the right side is 1 run. A fly ball to right, center, left, it's a run. They give us nothing. And you start thinking this may come back and hurt us later. That's how it felt. The good thing is Durangelo was on early. Gets a 1-2-3 inning here in a second. Strikeouts of Espinal, Barcy, and Lanive. Top of third. State finally breaks through here. And it really felt like it may be a matter of time. And it was. Chance grounds out the first unassisted, the very first pitch. Then Mershon kind of bloop singles that thing out to left center. Just kind of throws his hands out there and connects. And it just kind of like a dying quail. It falls in between 3 defenders. And then Mercy still second. That's a big, big stolen base. Because of the fact, that's a left-handed pitcher. I guess one of the best catchers in America. And Mersh gets it stolen. They end up walking DJ, and I think part of that walk is because Mershon was such an irritant on the bases. I think he really, really distracted Futrell a little bit. And then Hines reaches on a fielder's choice here. Now, this is a play I want to talk about. And for all of you young ball players out there, whether you're softball players or baseball players, listen up. Hunter Hines hits a ground ball to second. Now, it's a backup second baseman in there because of the fact that the normal second baseman, Jaden Davis, took that ball to the face on that bunt attempt on Saturday. And a lot of Vandy people are upset, but it is a strike. It was a strike. It's the way it should have been. It was scored correctly. The officials did a good job there. So it's a backup second baseman in there. So you know the timing may be off a little bit. But Hunter Hines could have just kind of dejectedly run down to first base, but he did not. The new svelte Hunter Hines runs down the line wide open, and he beats it out on a fielder's choice to extend the inning. Now, if he is a half step slower, the inning's over. 2023 Hunter Hines can't make this play. You say, Steve, it's a ground out. They forced a runner at second. He didn't make a play. Yes, he did. Because every pitch and every play matters. Because of that hustle, it extends the inning. Instead of it being an inning-ending 4-6-3, it ends up being a fielder's choice. Now there's runners on the corners. And what do you know? Hyzak comes up and nearly pokes one out of the yard. It ends up being a double out there off the wall, scores 2 runs. That's the end of the day for Futrell. Larry is then hit by the pitch. This Ginther kid, if they had left him, man, we'd have 10-run ruled him. He hits Larry, and then Kohler hits one out of Hawkins Field. His first home run is a Bulldog to make it 5-0, and they get Pulliam to strike out swinging on a full count. None of those 5 runs score if Hunter Hines dogs it down the line. It's kind of like the Jake Mangum effect. You know, every time Jake hit the baseball, he would try to put pressure on the defense and sometimes force an error. But if Hunter Hines doesn't play baseball right here, this doesn't happen. It's not 5-0. We're on defense right here. But instead, we force the pitching change, barrel a couple balls up, and get some separation in the ballgame. 5-0 for State. Really, really big. Bottom of the third. Now with the beneficiary of a 5-0 lead, Durangelo's like, okay, let's go. We're going to really challenge hitters now. So we get a foul out the third and ground out the first and a fly out to right. You say, but Steve, we didn't get the strikeouts. Guys, I don't even care about when we get a 5-run lead in the middle innings, you go compete in the zone and make them put the ball in play, be a little more pitch efficient. You don't have to be as careful. You can really challenge hitters. All right, top of four, Johnny Long is hit by the pitch. And then Bryce Chance grounds into a double play. And then Mershon homers to left. Jordan goes down swinging. But it's now a 6-0 ball game. Durangelo still dealing here. Bastine strikes out looking. Austin grounds out the short. Diaz strikes out swinging. It's a no-hitter through four innings, folks. And it's a 6-0 ball game. And you're thinking, okay, we're good, we're good, we're good. Vanderbilt's not going to quit. Now, they take Ginther out and bring in Guth. And again, if they had left Ginther in the ballgame, this thing would have been over in 7 innings. I truly believe that. That kid could not find the zone. Hines strikes out swinging. Hizak then singles to the right side. Larry flies out to center. And then Kohler grounds to second base. They force a runner at short. So again, traffic on the bases. And you feel like, hey, we're good. Bottom of five. They finally get a hit. Espinal doubles to left center, and then Bartzy walks. We flipped over and tried to pitch left-handed there. It didn't work out, and we come back and strike out the side. So through 5 innings, we've allowed 2 base runners and 1 hit, and we close the frame on 3 consecutive case swingings. So no, you wouldn't have had a pitcher up. You wouldn't. Let's go ahead and stop with that right now. When you're up 6-0 and you got a guy just struck out the side, 3 consecutive hitters after giving up his first hit of the day, issuing his first walk of the day, you're not thinking pitch and change. You're not. You're thinking we can probably get another inning. Top of 6, Pulliam pulls that ball down the line. It goes off the third baseman's glove, and it is a single. Longman strikes out swinging. They walk Chance. So here we are again. A chance would, you know, runners on. A chance for us to advance the lead, and we should have here. Mershon flies out to left, and then DJ grounds out to the shortstop. So runner in scoring position, less than 2 outs, and we can't advance a runner here. Bottom of 6. The wheels kind of fall off for us here, folks. Holcomb doubles down the line and left on a 1-2 count. And basically, Lamonis kind of touched on this, the fastball was elevating a little bit. We're leaving it up some. But the slider really wasn't changing planes. It was kind of flattening out a little bit. So there wasn't as much bite to the slider. And that's what happens here. He pulls that slider down the left field line. And then lo and behold, it's a pass ball. Runner goes to third. Vastine then shoots one the other way for a double. Run scores 6-1. And then Austin, again, that kid's a really good ball player. Singles back up the middle. Vastine comes around to score. And it's another pass ball. And some of these pass balls are wild pitches. I don't always agree with the scoring. Then Diaz strikes out looking. And you think, we're okay. We're okay. Then Espinal singles to the right side. The run scores. You got to go get him. We bring in Nolan Stevens. And we consistently put Nolan Stevens right in the stew pot on the road in big ball games. Now, he'll be better for it in the long run. But we're asking that kid to do an awful lot as a freshman. First guy, he walks, Bartzy. And I thought this situation, too, we got ahead in a count, and we started nibbling a little bit. He just got attacked his own. Lanive then hits a pop fly to left that the wind carries out. And, again, give him some credit, too, for generating some good backspin. But, man, off the bat, that looked like it was going to be 25 feet short of the track. And it's carried and carried and carried and carried, and it finds the seats. It's now a 6-6 ball game, and right now many of you thought we're going to lose. Polk grounds out the third. Koziel grounds out the second. And so it's basically going to be a 9-out fight between these two teams. It had been a great series, and we're going to have a great finish. And lo and behold, we got one. Hunter lines out to right field. He hit that ball really hard. It just didn't get down for him. Hyzak, and this is when they bring Miller Green in. Hyzak lines out to center, and Larry grounds out to short. So Miller Green, you know, big physical kid, but guys, State hit all three of these baseballs hard. I was somewhat, even though it's a tie ball game, I was somewhat encouraged. Like, you know, a lot of times you bring a reliever in and he kind of shuts you down. We clearly had a good scouting report on this kid because we barreled some balls up the very first time we saw him. Bottom of seven, Holcomb singles to left center. Vastine reaches on a fielder's choice. This is a crazy one here, right? It's just crazy. We talk about every play and every pitch matters. It's true. We get the ground ball to Hines, and we try to take the lead runner here, and lo and behold, it hits the runner, you know. So everybody's safe. We don't even get the benefit of the out, you know. And, of course, the gift of hindsight is always magical. If we step on the bag here, it's probably a different inning. But Hunter made the right decision, especially with a slow runner leaving from first. You may even have a chance to turn a double play. But worst-case scenario, you cut down the lead runner. In a tie ball game, it's important. And then they lay a bunt down. And I had really thought this ball was going to roll foul. I think Nolan Stevens, number one, you have no chance when you pick it up that late. The only chance you have is to let it roll. He had to make a decision on the fly. We had the benefit of watching it. You know, he's involved in the game. So now the bases are loaded. And it's so crazy here. You know, just two back-to-back ground balls, right? Of course, one of them is the courtesy of a bunt there. But you think they're fixing to break the game open and we're going to be done here. Well, Diaz flies out. We get a pop-up second base. Runner can't go. And then there's the ground ball. We take the fielder's choice. The run scores. And, again, great play here by Mershon just to get the lead runner here because they had no chance of getting two. A ball hit that hard into the hole towards his right. You just got to make the easy play, and that's the out at third. And again, you start thinking, if we're able to get an out on that ground ball to Hines, and I'm not being critical of Hunter, absolutely not, this inning's over. It's over. Now, I guess the good thing is they didn't expand the lead, but here's the deal. On that fielder's choice that played a third, that's the final out of the inning. So it'd be a 6-6 ball game. Yeah, it's again, every pitch mattered. Every play mattered. It was nuts, man. And so they bring in Carson Liggett. This is after the hit-by-pitch from Stevens, right, to load the bases again. And Lanive fouls out to the third baseman behind the plate. Really good effort here, even on a 3-1 count. Challenge that guy and get the out. So Carson Liggett ends up being your winner. Top of eight, State gets something going. And I'm sitting there thinking, hey, if we can just get a guy on here, then it gives Jordan and Hines both a chance to swing late. And we go 1-2-3. So Kohler goes down swinging. Pulliam strikes out swinging. Long strikes out looking. And it really felt like this game is probably going to be over. Well, we made it cute because we hit the first hitter and then balk him to second. Crazy. Koziel then flies out to center. The runner tags and takes third. And you're thinking, that's a huge insurance run. And here's what we do, guys. One of the best defensive plays that you'll ever see. Ever. Ever. It is a ground ball tailing away from Kohler. And he makes the stop. Guys, he is nearly in the coaching box. And he catches and throws. He had no time to even set his feet. It's like a hot potato deal, right? He gets to it, and he throws an absolute strike to home. He could not have thrown that ball any better with 100 other opportunities. And Johnny Long blocks up and gets a tag down. What a huge play in this ballgame. And I think that kind of gets lost in all the heroics of what happened in the ninth. Without this play, our ninth is completely different. Absolutely. And I want to make sure that people give Logan Kohler plenty of credit for that. And go back and look at the clip. It's on Twitter. It's on Facebook, everywhere else. Go to the official Mississippi State accounts, and you can see how little time Kohler had. And that, you know what that is, guys? That's thousands and thousands and thousands of reps. And then you execute the play perfectly. And it had to be a perfect throw. If it takes Johnny Long anywhere else, if Johnny has to leave and go left or right, it's a run. Perfect execution. Perfect. All right, we walk fast down here. Niners are first and second, but we get Austin to strike out swinging. And so that ends the threat. So again, good effort there by Kohler. We get to the ninth here. Funny things happen in nine innings. I mean, it really does. And sometimes we've been on the back end of this thing, right? It happened at Florida. You know, happened at Ole Miss in that extra inning game. Crazy things happen. But really good at bat here by Bryce Chance. I don't remember the pitch count, but he fouled it and fouled it and fouled it and fouled it back. And number one, this is a high leverage inning, right? I mean, you got a young guy from Nashville on the mound, SEC series, clincher on the line. And you're thinking, I can't retire this guy. I can't beat him. And so you keep throwing the fastball, and he keeps fouling it back and fouling it back and fouling it back. And then you can't throw the breaking ball for a strike. And so you get in a situation here mentally where you're thinking, well, goodness, I can't afford to walk this guy. And so what do you know? He eventually gives in with the fastball, and Bryce absolutely rips this thing to left. But it's a line drive. They run it down. You're thinking, okay, here we go. Mershon, same situation. Battles. Guys, it's a 1-2 count. Fouls it back, fouls it away. And you know that you got to think about, what is this pitcher thinking? I mean, he's not a robot. It's like, man, these guys aren't going to quit. And what do you know? Mershon wins. And both of these at-bats are a win, even though only one guy got on base. These are winning at-bats. You're grinding out a pitcher. And, of course, here, Mershon gets on, so maybe you've got a chance to get DJ and Hunter. You're hopeful DJ doesn't grind into double play here, even though he's very difficult to double up. You want to get Hines back to the plate, but, you know, DJ's certainly capable of a big fly, too. And he had a tough weekend. And I almost felt like it was going to be a perfect thing. But lo and behold, what do? They try to pick off Mershon, and they throw it away. And because of the fact it goes into the camera well, all of a sudden, he's gifted second base. Now there's a runner in scoring position. Now you're thinking, hey, just give me a hard single somewhere, and the game is tied. And DJ strikes out on three pitches. Hunter Hines comes up, and with him comes the Vandy crowd. They're on their feet. They're clapping. They're stomping their feet. They're whistling. It's a big moment. And we're like that at Duty Noble Field, too, right? It's big. I mean, other than we don't whistle, you know. But they're on their feet. And Hunter Hines had killed them on Saturday. So you're thinking it's almost poetic justice, right? This is going to be their guy. We're going to take their heart, and we're going to stomp on it right here at the home plate. Very first pitch was a slider. Tailed out of the zone. Hunter Hines told me in postgame after that weak slider, he didn't say weak, I'll call it weak, that he was sitting fastball. And remember, the last time up against Miller Green, he hit the ball really hard. It just stayed up. And he gets that fastball, and he meets it out in front. Kids, this is a point of contact lesson right here. Think about where that fastball was. Go back and look at a replay. That it wasn't like it was just, you know, up in his eyes. When you're looking fastball, you can get that bat head out front, which is what Hunter Hines did, and he turned that thing around and hits it well out of Hawkins Field. Arguably the most memorable home run of Hunter Hines' career. I go back to the one he hit at Alabama as a freshman to tie the game. That season didn't end the way we wanted it to. But because of what this one means in the SEC standings and for this series clincher for us to get a big road series win, it was unexpected when the season began. This is it. To me, this is the Hunter Hines moment. And so now it's an 8-7 ball game. And, you know, Hines is usually very stoic. He's not a kid that gets very emotional. He did yesterday. He did. Hizak then grounds out to short. And so we just got to get 1-2-3. We bring in Tyson Harden for Ligon. It felt like the absolute right move. Even though he'd give up a couple hits back on Friday, it felt like, you know what, in the emotion of this, I need this kid. I know he's going to attack in his own. And really the difference in Tyson Harden this year and last year is that he can throw something besides the fastball for a strike. He can throw the sinker. He can throw the slider. When you can compete in his own with three pitches, you are in command. You just got to hope you don't get beat in a guessing game. We also inserted Nate Chester in place of Ethan Pulliam as a defensive replacement late. And he was tested. You get the ground ball, and it was not an easy play. Big chopper there. And that's a really fast guy getting down the line there. That's the same guy that hit that little bleeder out to Kohler. And we didn't even attempt to throw. That's how fast he is. Really good player. We throw him out. Espinal then hits a ground ball that seems like it's destined for the middle. And Tyson Harden goes up with the bare hand. And it's off of his hand and to Nate Chester, who then throws him out at first. And people were panicking a little bit. And I was like, guys, it's a catcher. Okay, it's like, you got him. And then we have a lengthy at bat, end up walking Bartzy, and just didn't execute a pitch. They put the pinch hitter in, pinch runner in, and pinch hitter. Bring in Bulger, who's had 14 hits on the year. Played 19 games. And this is a guy that played against us in Omaha in 21. That's how long he's been there. And now he's there as a senior and can't find a place to start. And they put him in the game, and it's a ground out of third base. And really rather routine there. And State wins 8-7. One of those ball games that I will remember for many years. I don't know that... This is probably one that I'll tell people about, especially if this season ends up on a really good positive note. I think we'll look back at this and say, you know what, this is one of those series where we talk about being back. Is Bulldog baseball back? Well, I think we kind of verified that this weekend. Vanderbilt, of course, number 11 team in the country. And again, they're not elite, but they're a really good team. They're a team that will probably be in a super regional somewhere. Especially if they get some pitchers healthy. If Futrell can come back and be what they need him to be, I won't be the least bit surprised to see this group at Omaha, depending on the draw. But to be honest with you, I think we're a better team than they are. I mean, you go back and look, it's not like we got dominated at the dish. Even back on Friday, we lose 4-0. Everybody's like, man, this offense, guys, it was just kind of a case of bad luck. But I give Vanderbilt a lot of credit, man. They had every opportunity to fold in both of these Bulldog wins. They didn't. Give our kids credit, too. We could have easily tapped out yesterday, as Lamona said. Kind of felt sorry for ourselves. You get up 6-0. Next thing you know, you give up 7 on answer. But rather than quit, the Bulldogs showed some grit. Dave Marchand, 3-for-4 yesterday. 3 runs scored, an RBI. Hunter Hines, a couple runs scored. Had the one hit. And, of course, he reaches on the fielder's choice there. And both of those times that he reaches base, obviously ends in runs. Connor Hizak quietly put together a good day, 3-for-5 with 2 RBI. Logan Kohler, of course, his first Bulldog home run. So Bulldogs with 10 hits on the day. And if you know, we talked about them being shorthanded, and they really were. We didn't see anybody we didn't expect to see, though. But when they're shorthanded, but when they get a complete game on Friday, that kind of removes a lot of that concern. And they didn't have to get too deep into it on Saturday. But it's not like we had to go out there and beat up on a midweek white flag pitcher. We beat their best arms. And this Mississippi State team is to be commended for their grit and for their willingness to fight for this university. And in many respects, has changed the trajectory of this season. All right, time for today's top 10 list. As always, brought to you by closewithblair.com. That's C-L-O-S-E with Blair, B-L-A-I-R.com. Blair Chandler is a mortgage professional. Blair is my friend, your friend, our collective friend in the mortgage industry. Whether you're looking to buy a game day condo, which is always a good idea, right? Maybe you're thinking that's the future retirement home anyway. Let's just go ahead and find us a place up here and start getting settled and begin to kind of navigate and migrate our stuff up here because retirement's around the corner. You're thinking, I want to downsize and be closer to the place I love. Starkville, Mississippi. Yeah, we'd love to have you as a neighbor. Or maybe you're just kind of starting out in life. Maybe you've recently got married. You're planning to. You got the first big job. And so, you know what, Steve, I want to get a condo or a house and not throw my money away renting. Blair can help you with that too. Give him a call or text today at 601-500-2344. Give him a call or text today. That's his personal cell. It's not a call center or receptionist. It goes directly to Blair. We've had several Boneyard listeners that have closed loans with Blair. Been very happy with the results. Blair's got 23 years experience in this industry. Nobody stays in any industry 20 plus years by accident. Get Blair Chandler working for you at closewithblair.com. Okay. Very unique band in the last, 15, 20 years maybe. Coming up on it. Founded out of Cincinnati, Ohio. They relocated to Hollywood, where all good rock bands eventually end up. This is a band, too, that has an 80s look and a bit of an 80s sound with a bit of a modern twist. I'm talking about Andy Biersack and the Black Veil Brides. They have a huge, huge following. Huge. And a lot of it is the theatrics, of course. And one of the things that made the 80s great is, I mean, you think about Guitar Hero, right? And Rock Band, all that kind of stuff. You know, like, you look back at those bands from the 80s, and there was a lot of image involved, too. There was some substance, but a lot of image, too. Like, when you mention the name Slash, right? You don't just remember that great guitar solo on November Rain. Right? You don't remember Double Talking Jive, necessarily. But when I say Slash, you get a visual image of Slash, the hair, the hat. You know, you mentioned Nikki Sixx, Tommy Lee. A lot of those bands you look at and you remember that it was a total package. And one of the reasons we liked them so much is because they were so darn cool, right? It's true. They didn't look like us. You know, many of us were wearing our JCPenney jeans and, you know, that striped polo shirt that your grandma bought you. And, you know, the only sign of rebellion is you had a little bit of a mullet. Yeah, but these guys were the real deal. You're like, man, I want to be like those guys. I want to be totally bought in. And so Black Veil Brides kind of combines that era. One of the things I love about them is the guitar harmonies. Kind of Iron Maiden-ish in that respect. They're not as heavy as Iron Maiden, but they do some really cool things with the instrumentation. And so we're going to be pretty quick with this one. But Black Veil Brides, cool song, cool band. The number one song is without a doubt my favorite one. And very inspirational song, and it's a song, too, that means a lot to me. I'll talk about that a little bit more if we get down the list. But all right, number 10, a great track called The Last One, The Last One, number 10. And it has that kind of old 80s intro, and the song just kind of builds and builds and builds. And again, it's one of these, you know, songs about, hey, this is like the last time this is going to happen. You know, I'm not going to put up with this anymore. That's one thing about the Black Veil Brides. They're a very positive band in many respects. Number 9 is Heart of Fire. It's a great track, too. I'm not going to spend a lot of time expounding on these just because we're kind of pressed for time. But number 8, The Legacy. That's a great one, too. Number 7 is a newer single that came out a couple weeks ago, maybe. They've got a little bit of an EP that's coming out, 3 songs on that one, but Bleeders, number 7, Bleeders. Number 6, Fallen Angels. That was kind of a breakthrough hit for them, kind of a gateway song for a lot of people in the rock community, and said, you know, these guys are okay. Number 5 is Goodbye Agony, and it's kind of like letting go of all this stuff. And how much of that do we kind of carry with us when we better serve by just kind of letting it go and sink to the bottom? But it's not an up-tempo song. You know, it's one of those songs that is somewhat melodic, but also kind of serves as a bit of a ballad. But it's got some rock stuff in it. Number 4 is Rebel Love Song. Like this one a lot, too. It doesn't sound like a love song. It's really kind of an anthemic call to action in many respects. Number 3, back to the very beginning. Their first big hit is called Knives and Pens. And when you first hear this, and I would recommend actually starting there. I would start in the beginning of the discography, and then kind of worked my way forward. We Stitched These Wounds was the debut album back in 2010. And then Set the World on Fire came out the next year. And then Wretched and Divine, The Story of the Wild Ones. That is a great one. That is a great album. Black Veil Brides self-titled album came out in 14. It's weird when bands do that. And then Veil came out in 2018, and then The Phantom Tomorrow in 2021. I would start at We Stitch These Wounds and work myself forward. That's what I would suggest. But number two, Asana was a huge hit for them. And it's kind of, you remember like Metallica did Unforgiven, and then Unforgiven 2, Unforgiven 3. Well, this is kind of in that same vein. There was a song called Savior that was a really, really popular hit with fans. And so they did Savior 2. I think Andy's vocal on this is amazing. I really do. I really dig this one a lot. I think you'll dig it too. And even if you're not a huge rock fan, I think this is a song that would appeal to a lot of people. And there's a lot to like about this song. I think the lyrical content is very, very good. Again, it's kind of a song of empowerment. It's really a song of allegiance to another person, not necessarily about love. But in some respects, I guess you could kind of take that leap with the song. But it's really kind of about, hey, you know, you're a person that, you know, you were like a savior to me. You know, and we all have had that. And I don't just mean, you know, from a religious standpoint. We all have had somebody in our life that's made a difference. I heard something this weekend that really applies to this. And I don't know where the movie comes from. And it may even be a spoken word thing, but Anthony Hopkins said it. He talks about the people in your life. There are three kinds of people that come to your life. There's the leaf people. They're only with you for like a season. And then there are the branch people that'll be with you for a while, but eventually, you know, the weight of it all kind of gets to them and they break off. But then there's the root people in your life. The ones that are going to be with you kind of behind the scenes, kind of underground, supporting you, holding you up through thick and thin. They never want any of the credit. They just want to see you make it. And we need really all three types of people. You know, it's true. But it kind of fits what we were talking about last week about you have tourists in your life from time to time. Not every leaf turns into a root. It's impossible. It would get kind of busy down there anyway. It's not just important to be well-grounded and rooted in something. You've got to bloom too. But number one for me, and this is one of those songs too, that when I was kind of going through some transition in my own life, this is a song that really spoke to me and in many respects made me realize that maybe I had not pursued enough to know about Black Veil Brides. Because I said, oh, these guys are just kind of ripping off Motley Crue and, you know, that they're wearing all the Motley Crue stuff. And yeah, matter of fact, I got a tattoo at the same, I got a West Hollywood tattoo. There's like a gold record in there, and there's like a signed whiskey bottle from Black Veil Brides. The guy did my tattoo out there, my Amaryllis tattoo, also does work for Black Veil Brides. And so that was kind of cool. And he was telling me what good guys they were, especially Andy. And I was thinking, well, maybe I'm wrong about these guys. And then lo and behold, this song hit. It's called In the End. And it's so great. Like, number one, the music in and of itself is very reminiscent of the 80s, but it's very upbeat in many respects. Like, the, you know, it's just a different dynamic and all this. But I'm going to read you a few of the lyrics. He says, in the end, as you fade into the night, who will tell the story of your life? That's a very profound and prophetic question in many respects. That's one of the things I used to ask myself. Is, you know, when I'm dead and gone, what kind of legacy have I left? You know, everybody leaves a bit of themselves and the people they love and your children, your grandchildren, and you hope that it's your better qualities, right? That's not always the case. But I began to kind of ponder on this. I was like, you know, what does this mean for me? It was one of the reasons that I wrote the book, When the Bottom Falls. In many respects, the story of my life. Back to our lyrics. In the end, as my soul's laid to rest, what is left of my body, or am I just a shell? And Andy, of course, is a guy who was raised in church. You know, so some of this, I guess you could say, line of thinking kind of comes from that, kind of questioning that. And I have fought, and with flesh and blood, I commanded an army. Through it all, I have given my heart for a moment of glory. And then it kind of gets into the chorus. In the end, as you fade into the night, who will tell the story of your life? And who will remember your last goodbye? Because it's the end, and I'm not afraid. I'm not afraid to die. I absolutely love that. and I haven't feared death in a long time. And maybe as I get closer to it, maybe that changes. But I've never really been one that's been afraid to die. Sometimes I've been afraid to live and deal with the consequences and, you know, deal with the stress and all that kind of stuff of life. But the reality of that is you simply just have to keep pushing. I heard somebody break it down for me years ago and said, you know, you just got to suit up, show up, and do the next right thing. And sometimes that's what life's about. But, you know, I want a little more from that. I don't just want to be a cog in the machinery, right? But again, that song really began to kind of, meditate on that, on about the whole premise of this song. It's like, you know, kind of like in the end, when it's all said and done, what are people going to say about us? And I've read before, like, you know, Richard Gervais and others, like, well, I don't care, I'll be dead. Well, I care. Because I want to be able to leave as much as I can of myself, of my positive qualities anyway, and to try to be a bit of an encouragement to people. It's one of the reasons that, you know, I do so much with the written word. Not only is that a gift from God, but also, too, it's one of those things that I begin to think about, too, is like, when I'm gone, what am I leaving for my children? You know, and I think When the Bottom Falls, in many respects, is kind of a gift to my children and my future grandchildren, to kind of explain where they come from. There's some family history in there, but of course, it's really kind of centered on who I am, what I believe, what I've been through in many respects. And but that really was one of those things, too, that this song, there were times I would just put it on repeat just because of the fact the vibe of that song really kind of ministered to me in some respects, because I was really challenged by that. It was like, you know, I feel like I know a lot of things. I feel like I've experienced a lot of things, and I feel like it would be a disservice to the second chance I was gifted in life by God himself to not document some of that, not for profit, but to help other people. And that's one of the reasons we hadn't pushed a whole lot with When the Bottom Falls. You know, it's not like some of these other books that I have that, you know, we got to get out there and go break the bank with them. And of course, you know, the more books we sell, the better we are, but and certainly the happier we are. But I wrote this really to help other people. You know, and again, you can go to whenthebottomfalls.com and you can order a copy today. And all my sports titles are there, too. But that one's different than the rest. It is. And as I've shared with you guys, it was kind of a surprise to me, too. Like when you know, I do book signings for the sports books, I mean, you know, it's a celebration. It is. You know, dog pile, everybody comes up, signs books, and everybody's grinning, wearing an NFL championship shirt. And they want to give you a high five and get their picture made. And not as many pictures get made on the When the Bottom Falls stuff. Just as many people buying books, but it's more of a somber thing because of the fact that we're dealing with life or death. It's not entertainment. It's life or death. And a lot of people come, and many of them come with their heads down. And they just ask to get their book signed and they leave. And so it's a much different deal because the subject matter is very heavy. It truly is. But it is a story of redemption. And really the genesis behind that book really kind of began with this song, In the End by Black Veil Brides. And so there you go. That's your top 10 list for today. We've got to hustle and get out of here. So we've got to get to these next few segments pretty quick here. But that's your top 10 list for today. If you have ideas for the top 10 list, please reach out, let us know. Best way to do that is to hit up Roy on Twitter at Dogmatic67. That's DAWGMATIC67. You can find our great list on Spotify on that same handle. Of course, I'm on social media at Scout Steve R. All right, next segment of the show brought to you by Campus Bookmart, a Starkvillian institution. I love Campus Bookmart. You love Campus Bookmart, as you should. The best place to get Mississippi State merchandise. And listen, they're absolutely stocked with Mississippi State baseball merchandise. You got a couple of weekends coming up here, you know, for baseball. And so you need to come get some new gear. You're going to be taking vacations. Everybody, you need to have Mississippi State Day when you're on vacation. If it's not State Day every day, for many of you it is. You need to get a fresh M over S cap, you know, so you don't, maybe get a dress cap, right? You know what I mean? Like you get, that's how I used to do it. Maybe I'm weird, but I would have like my knockaround hat. Like I would just wear my M over S cap, and then I would wear another one. Like if I was going out or something and I wanted to wear my Mississippi State cap, I'd have one that was nice and wasn't like sweated and faded by the sun. Maybe you consider doing that for yourself, right? But if you can't make it to town and see their smiling faces and get some amazing Mississippi State merchandise, whether it be for the house, the fan cave, the car, the wardrobe, whatever, you can visit them on the World Wide Web at campusbookmart.net. And by being a loyal Boneyard listener, we'll give you a phrase that pays. That's BSR, which stands for Beautiful Steve Robertson. That gets you free shipping on all orders over $75. Any order less than 75 bones, absolutely incomplete. Okay. Now, I don't know if you noticed, but it's been tough to win on the road in the Southeastern Conference this year. It typically is, and some of it has to do with the whole batting last thing because the talent levels are similar. But here we are at weekend results. Alabama takes a road series in Oxford 2-1. Missouri goes to Knoxville, gets swept. The only team in the conference to be swept was Missouri. Mississippi State, one of only two road teams to take a series. And, of course, State goes to Nashville and gets that done. Kentucky goes to South Carolina and drops the series. And, of course, Kentucky's lost back-to-back series. Now, we knew at some point they'd be a bump in the road. They're not the number one team in the country, nor should they be. We knew at some point there would be some difficulties. They've had some as of late. But they're not getting swept. Auburn goes to LSU. They lose 2 out of 3 there. Again, kind of a tough year for Butch. Florida goes to Arkansas, loses 2 out of 3. As we expected, Georgia goes to A&M, loses 2 out of 3. So 5 home winners, 2 home losers. So what does it mean? What does it mean, Steve, in the end? When you go back and look at all this of how the weekend shook out, what did it mean for Mississippi State baseball? What does it mean, you know, for the championship? In the SEC, what is that? You know, how does it look now? Well, here's where we are. Arkansas and Kentucky are now a tie. Arkansas has won their last 2 weekends, of course. Kentucky has not, and so now that we're 7 weekends into the year, Kentucky and Arkansas are tied at the top of the standings, 16-5. 16-5. Now, just behind them by a game in their respective divisions and in the overall standings is Tennessee and Texas A&M. And isn't it weird that A&M can be the number one team in the country and then be behind 2 different teams and tied with another in the SEC standings? Kind of a weird thing, right? So that's how it kind of shakes loose. So you got 2 teams tied for first and 2 tied for second. So the next team is your Mississippi State Bulldogs. Now in sole possession of 5th place. He said, but Steve, there's only 4 teams ahead of us and they're tied. Well, that's not how we do it, right? So as it stands right now, State would be the number 5 seed in the SEC tournament. We expect those numbers to change. But now State is a full game ahead of Vanderbilt and South Carolina. It's true. It's true. Now, from there, it gets pretty dicey. Georgia's 2 games back of State at 10-11. And then nobody else has double-digit wins in the league. Florida falls to 9-12 after the series against Arkansas. And guys, Florida's 22-21 overall. Isn't that nuts? Missouri 6-15, and then on the western side, Alabama's 9-12. So they're 3 games behind Mississippi State with the big series coming up this weekend. LSU now 7-14, tied with Ole Miss. 7-14. So LSU and Ole Miss are a game ahead of that last spot out of Hoover. If the tournament started today, Auburn and Missouri are out. However, Missouri just a game behind LSU and Ole Miss. So neither LSU or Ole Miss are out of the woods with Missouri. Because of the fact that, again, they're just a game back with 9 to play, they could catch somebody. They could. And they may. But, yeah, when you start looking at these overall records, we talk about, you know, the league is good this year. We just don't have any – I don't know that we have anybody outside of maybe Arkansas. And Tennessee's trending really well. Right? Tennessee's won 9 of 10. I don't know if you knew that. 9 of 10. And so that's the best 10-game stretch in the league right now. A&M is 8-2. But Tennessee kind of quietly kind of getting it together after a lot of people didn't really talk about them because all we could talk about was Kentucky and Arkansas and A&M. And now you look up and Tennessee's right in the thick of things. And again, it's a game out of first place with 9 to play. All very interesting. Now the difference is Kentucky and Tennessee have already played. And so this is one of the things that I think we should look at now And then we're going to get to our final segment. But we'll look at our schedule, but also, too, kind of what's ahead for this weekend. It's going to be a busy couple of days. What's interesting, too, Arkansas playing their final midweek series of the season. But Lipscomb is at Tennessee. These are all Tuesday games. Georgia is at Kennesaw State. Be careful down there, Bulldogs. Tarleton State's going to be at Texas A&M. Linden Woods at Missouri. Tennessee Tech at Vanderbilt. Grambling is at LSU. Missouri State, of course, has a twosome. They'll play Tuesday and Wednesday in Fayetteville. East Tennessee State on Wednesday will head to South Carolina. Of course, Ole Miss, Mississippi State. Down in the Governor's game. We'll preview that on Wednesday. But it should be, you know, these midweek games have been so weird. You can never take anything for granted. But outside of the State Ole Miss thing, I think for the most part you're going to see things kind of just kind of hold to script here. You know, I think that'll probably be the case. But looking ahead to the weekend here, we talk about like separation series and that sort of stuff. This is going to be an interesting and wild weekend in many respects. It always is. But when you consider what everybody's fighting for, outside of a couple of these series, it's pretty evenly matched between opponents. They're all kind of vying for the same seat at the table. Vanderbilt's going to run down to Georgia. Now, after seeing what you saw from this Vanderbilt pitching staff, you got to think maybe they got a chance down there at Georgia. But with this Vanderbilt offense, you kind of wonder, do they get elevated a little bit going down to Foley Field? All right, Tennessee is at Florida. Now, that has been a difficult venue for Tennessee over the years. Now, of course, in recent years, you know, Tennessee's had some great success. But that could be interesting, too, you know, going down there to Condren Field, Family Park there. That could be a different dynamic. And then we talked about the front runners, Arkansas and Kentucky. They're going to meet head-to-head in Lexington this weekend. Of all the years to get Arkansas at home, this may be the year for Mangione and those guys. Because of the fact, if you're chasing an SEC championship, the number one team that you're competing with comes to your backyard. That is going to be an incredible series to watch. Ole Miss goes to Auburn. Now, again, Auburn, four games, out of Hoover right now with nine to play. It's brutal, man. It's brutal. But, hey, you get this Ole Miss group coming in here that Ole Miss got a couple guys that can swing the sticks a little bit. And Dole's pretty good on Saturday. But this may be Auburn's last chance to, you know, really make this thing interesting. Alabama, of course, comes here. South Carolina goes to Missouri. And, of course, South Carolina, they're fighting to kind of get up in the top half of the league right now and catch us. But Missouri has been a real challenge at home for some reason. It's weird. And then Texas A&M goes to LSU. That was a series when the schedule came out, people were like, wow, this could be great. And now you look at it, and it's really lost some of its luster. And I think in many respects, too, the honeymoon is over for Jay Johnson at LSU. You know, you won an AFL championship last year. It's true. And then you go out here and raise all this money for NIL, and then now here you are, you're tied for the last spot in Hoover. It's not a great thing by any stretch of the imagination. But, you know, looking at the way things are trending and the way teams are playing, we talk about this parity in the league. In the last 10, of course, I mentioned Tennessee's 9-1, and then A&M is 8-2. But directly behind them, Mississippi State and Arkansas at 7-3. So the third best last 10 in the Southeastern Conference. Your Bulldogs playing pretty well right now, and then when you factor into it, it's actually 7-8. Yeah, so we're trending well. We got to find a way to go take care of Alabama. We're going to preview that Alabama series on Friday. And looking ahead, too, I deleted my tab before I was ready. It happens. But, you know, thinking about the baseball series and things of that nature, I used to be so great where you could just kind of pull up, one link and it would all work for you. But, looking ahead here, we talk about, SEC series and all the fun things that go along with that stuff. Every game, at this point, every game matters to us, whether we're playing or not. You know, we're all scoreboard watching now because of the fact that it all impacts seeding. And how much fun is it for us to consider that? The long series that starts on Thursday this week is Tennessee, Florida. But remember how it felt the last couple years? You know, I mean, it's like we just trying to find a way to get to Hoover. You know, we got to win this, got to win that. But now all of a sudden, you know, it's like, hey, we may be in the hosting conversation. You win the series this weekend, that gets you to a minimum of 14 games with two weeks to play. And again, that's a road series and a home series. But if you can get two this weekend, you've got a really good chance to host. You've got a really good chance to be in that conversation. And so, and you're going to look around the people around us, you know, the South Carolinas of the world and the Vanderbilts, and you're going to say, you know what, I'm hoping those guys lose. You know, we want to make sure we stay as high as we can and get the biggest RPI boost we possibly can. But the reality of it is the conversation has now shifted to no longer either we're going to make the tournament or we're not. Now it's shifting to do we host or not. And that's progress for Mississippi State. And it would be a tremendous thing for the Bulldogs to be able to host this year. I'm still not quite ready to get out on that limb. But it is certainly now a possibility. And you win this weekend, I think it becomes a probability. All right, final segment of the show brought to you by the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. Just Google Stark Vegas Clubhouse. Google is your friend. Even though it's kind of a corporate sellout these days, it'll still get you where you want to go. Google Stark Vegas Clubhouse. Their Facebook page will then auto-populate, and you can peruse the amenities that are available to you when you bring your large group to Starkville. I don't guess it has to be a large group. You can just get a big house for two people if you want. Maybe you just want to sit on opposite sides of it. I don't know. You do what you want. Whether it be a draft party, as we just hosted at the Stark Vegas Clubhouse, or it be a couples weekend, a guys weekend, girls weekend, maybe it's just a reunion, I don't know. Or maybe you just, maybe grandpa and grandma want to have everybody under one roof for one big weekend, midweek, whatever. Maybe you're bringing a group of workers to town, and you say, you know what, it's cheaper to do this than to go get five hotel rooms and have everybody scattered all around the city, and you don't know where Bob is. Bob said he was going to the room. We haven't seen him since, right? It'd be nice to have everybody together. And so when you Google that, some booking options are going to come up for you. It's going to be Airbnb, VRBO, and even Evolve. The Evolve website, if you use that one, I can save you some money. Use promo code BSR10. They get you 10% off your stay. This, guys, it's 5 minutes away from the Mississippi State campus. It's a renovated golf course clubhouse. It's amazing. That big back porch area, 5 bedrooms, got the big fire pit area out there. It's quiet, so you can just kind of recreate and get a little peace of mind out there. And how great would it be to have grandma making those cinnamon rolls for breakfast one Saturday morning? I can smell them right now. Stark Vegas Clubhouse, proud to partner with them. Next time you're bringing a large group of people to town, look no further than the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. Okay, the NFL draft is over, and we had some Bulldogs get drafted, as you guys know. DeCambriana Richardson, no surprise there. We did expect him. He's the 112th pick in the draft. And he's going to, you know, he's a guy I think will stick because he is so freakish as an athlete. Pretty incredible. So he's drafted here. And when you start working through this, you begin to think about, and the lineage that Darcell McBath left here with Martin Emerson, Emmanuel Forbes, and now DeCam. And again, it's no surprise that DeCam gets drafted. But, congratulations to him. Congratulations to everybody around him in that respect. Because, you know, it's one of those things, too, where nobody gets here alone, right? Everybody's got a family out there that's helped them. And now DeCam leaving Mississippi State to head to Las Vegas. Jaden Cromedy selected by the Carolina Panthers. Excited about that. Excited for him. Sixth-round pick. And he's a guy, too, that we expected some big things from. We got him when he was healthy, right? Big baby, as they call him, the best. Bukki Watson, drafted by the Cleveland Browns. No surprise here, too. Ultra-productive guy. Kind of surprised he lasted as long as he did. He goes in the sixth round. And, pretty exciting time for him headed to the Browns. The Midwest Territory, rife with NFL teams. They're not the only Bulldogs that are going to have an opportunity, though, to continue playing. And this was our largest draft class of the last few years. back in 2020. We had five guys selected. But anyway, so some free agent signings. Marcus Banks signs with the Buccaneers. Tulu Griffin, a guy that some thought may sneak in on the back end of the draft, headed to the Las Vegas Raiders. And, of course, with the new kickoff roles, he may be a weapon there. Sean Preston Jr., the pride of St. James High School, headed to the New Orleans Saints. He'll be close by there, and hopefully it works out for him. Jet Johnson, ironically, going to be a New York Jet. It's like it was meant to be, right? And Jet, ultra-productive. Jet's a guy, too, that may not wow you in camp, but all of a sudden you get out there and practice, and he just starts laying people out. Freddie Roberson, a guy that transferred to state, also was invited to rookie minicamp by the Seattle Seahawks. And so that's kind of where things stand right now. Could be some guys that get some camp invites a little bit later. But congratulations to all of those guys and to their families. And we are grateful to their contributions to Mississippi State football. Again, it wasn't a very talented senior group from an NFL prospect standpoint. We had a lot of guys that were great college players, but maybe not a lot of guys that were bona fide NFL guys. And so these guys, taken a little bit later in the draft, they'll have an opportunity to make the roster. But none of these guys guaranteed a roster spot. They got to go to camp and earn it. I feel like of those three, that DeCamrion, provided he stays healthy, may have the better NFL career. I just think that guy is such a freak of an athlete. And the benefit he got from playing behind Martin Emerson, playing behind Emmanuel Forbes, and kind of learning from those guys and seeing what they have become is very significant. And he's going to have those guys to kind of lean on as he gets into OTAs and things like that, kind of figuring out what to expect. But very proud of all of these young men, and we'll get ready to move forward. And so we kind of put a pin in football for a while and kind of shift now our attention to, football recruiting. We're guys are out now. The portal closes tomorrow. Spring evaluation period is open. So you're going to have some new offers. You're going to have some campus visits and things like that. And then, guys, before you know it, here in about 5 weeks, we're going to have prospect camps. And so that'll be our focus for our coverage for football. And, we'll do some columns from time to time. But the reality of it is it's not going to be a ton of football news outside of the recruiting front, at least we hope not, until we get back into camp. And, of course, there's some portal news out there. We've got some whispers out there about some official visitors coming in this week. And we'll talk about that a little bit later in the week as we begin to kind of confirm with the visitors themselves. Well, what I always try to do is even if we hear of something, even if a young man, it's reported they're going to visit here, we try to confirm it directly with the player before we go report that, because I don't trust everybody else's reporting. I've been burned by that in the past. Like, oh, this guy's going to visit here, and you get the kid on the phone, and he's like, nah, I'm not going there then. And so sometimes things get misconstrued because everybody's reliant on secondhand sources at times. And so it's always good to get it confirmed directly from the horse's mouth. As I mentioned earlier, if you hadn't done so, go to whenthebottomfalls.com. You can get all my books there. Well, you can get When the Bottom Falls and all my sports titles there. And come join us over at jeanspage.com. We just wrapped up a great stretch with the annual subscription promotion deal. We did 60% off for a couple days, kind of a transfer portal palooza, and then did it for 50%. If you missed out on that, I'm sorry, but you can get ahead now for 30% off. The annual subscription rate, and we'd certainly love to have you come join us. Bulldog baseball taking center stage now. I mean, we've got some portal activity in basketball and some in football, but as far as like on the field sports, baseball and softball both now trending in a very positive direction as it relates to the postseason. And so we're going to be on the road. We're going to go cover games. That's kind of what we do. And final comment today. Guys, I'm saying this with as much love as I can muster. I mean, as I've shared on the show before, I love all of you, but some of you make my head hurt. And some of you are basically denying yourself the ability to enjoy baseball season. Now, no matter your feelings about Chris Lemonis, and I get it, at times it's been a very polarizing relationship, right? In the beginning, we set an SEC record for most wins ever for a first-year SEC coach. Everybody's like, dude, we got it. And then we win an AFL championship in 2021. And the last 2 years have taken a lot of wind out of that sail. It's just true. I mean, it's taken a big toll on all of us. And the reason that so many people have such passionate opinions about this is because their love of Mississippi State. You love Mississippi State baseball, and you're like, hey, well, we're not used to this. We don't have back-to-back losing years. We're not that kind of program. And I get it, and I agree with it. But no matter your feelings about Chris, which I think much is misguided, but he's the head coach, and so when you have two losing seasons, you look at El Presidente. The Scott Foxhall thing didn't work out, and I'm a big fan of Scott Foxhall. He's a great man. He's a great pitching coach, but he just kind of lost it here. He did. He kind of lost the reins, and I hate it. But the reality of it is Justin Parker is coming here and proving to be a dude. But no matter what you think about coaches, let's just kind of put that aside for a little bit. Guys, Hunter Hines has nothing to do with that. Dakota Jordan, Cal Steven, they have nothing to do with that. Cal Steven wasn't even here the last 2 years. And so it's just one of those things I look at and I say, you know, we're having a good year. Is it a great year? No. It's a good year. We're fifth in the SEC with 3 weekends to go. It's not like we're fifth 2 weekends in. We've played 7 weekends of SEC baseball. We have a 12-9 record in the league. And some people are just like, you know what? I'm just going to hate watch this team, and there is no way. I can't support this. No matter what you think about a coach, what you think about an administrator or university president, any of that stuff, it's the M over S, man. And those kids deserve your support. And if you don't want me calling them kids, I'll call them young men. If those young men deserve your support, they deserve your attendance. They deserve your social media traffic. And so I say that because I see it, like even after we take 2 out of 3 on the road against former number 11 Vanderbilt, we have some people like, well, I just don't know. Get over it. We're not making a coaching change this year unless something absolutely ridiculous happens. It's not going to happen. And the sooner you accept that, the better it's going to be for you and everybody around you. I'm being your friend here. And so we're going to play Ole Miss in the Governor's game on Wednesday. It's going to be their Super Bowl. I mean, they've already won the series, right? We'd love to be able to win that and say, hey, we got to split with them this year, at least 2-2 in the overall record. But we're chasing some bigger things. Now, we want to go win the ball game, certainly. Don't get me wrong. But I know what's going to happen. If we lose, some of those same people are going to come back out of the woodwork and say, see, I told you. Guys, I'm just tell you this. We are headed in a different direction as Ole Miss right now. And I fully expect them to make a coaching change at the end of the year. I said that at the beginning of the year. And I didn't say that. It's because of the fact it's like, well, you know, Steve's got a good relationship with Lemonis. He's got to say that. Number one, I do have a great relationship with Lemonis, but no, I don't have to say that. I don't have to say it. I went and watched the I covered more offseason baseball this year than at any point in my career because I want to know. I want to know, and I want to be able to tell you. So I did the homework, and I watched him. I was like, you know what? And I sit on the show. I'm kind of cautiously optimistic. And then we get into spring. I said, guys, I'm no longer cautiously optimistic. I'm optimistic. And so now here we are. So I say that because of this. And I could chase a ton of rabbit trails right here, but I'm not going to. But it's not about me. It's not about you. And it's not about the naysayers. And it's not about the sunshine pumpers, as you want to call them. It's not about what everybody else wants. It's about Mississippi State baseball. That's what it's about. It's not about who's right or who's wrong. And I struggle with that sometimes too. I love being able to say I told you so. I do. I'm a terrible loser, but I'm an even worse winner, especially about something like this. You know, but at the end of the day, it's about Mississippi State baseball. The sport you grew up with. The weekends you spent up here with your folks hanging out in Left Field Lounge because Mississippi State baseball drew us together as a people. But now here we are. Basically a series win from legitimately being in the hosting discussion. And we got some folks that still can't be happy. And we still can't give Lamontis credit. And we still can't give the players credit. That's not a Mississippi State problem. It's a you problem. And so I'm just encouraging you, no matter what you've said, I don't care if you have advocated for Lamontis to be fired every day for 3 years now. I'm just asking you, can we just kind of set that aside for the next 3 weeks and beyond, really? Can we get through? Because I know what's going to happen. Like, if we win 17 regular season games in the SEC and we lose a game at Hoover, oh, we don't deserve to host. We don't deserve to. You're just waiting for it. And I know it's a coping mechanism. It is. Because it's like, I want to lay the groundwork. I'm going to forecast failure. And then if we win, I'm happy. But if we lose, I can be happy because I said, I told you so. That's a tough way to live, man. I'm happy to say I told you so that we won, but I would never want to say I told you so to the detriment of Mississippi State. I mean, come on. I'm just asking you, let's join arms in unison and let's pull this team onto a regional, man. You know, feel pretty confident we're going to be in a regional somewhere, probably as a two, but if we can find a way to win these next two home series and maybe take a game at Arkansas, that gives you 17 regular season wins in the league. You got a chance to host right here at Dirty Noble Field. Isn't that what you wanted? It's like, well, Steve, you know, we're a blue blood of college baseball. We should never have years like this. Well, they're behind us. Can we focus on this year, what's happening right now? Focus on this team doing something? Because, you know, Hunter Hines hasn't been to Omaha. Dakota Jordan hadn't been to Omaha. They never had that opportunity to host a regional at Dirty Noble Field. And now it's right here in front of us. So let's all join together and do our part to help get that done. And come out there and cheer like H-E-L-L for the Mississippi State Bulldogs. Until next time, let's all live our lives in a way we make more friends than enemies and people can see a difference in the way we live.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.